What's up, guys? We just want to take a second to thank all of the people who donate to our Patreon. You guys keep the show going. Thank you so much. Here are those superstars.
Kick it off, Pete.
Dan Snow.
Kevin Perez.
Lucas Sink.
Andrew Richardson.
Matthew Wood.
Mitchell McDonald.
Eduardo Martinez.
Jason Kelly.
Patrick Ho.
Zika Viral Comics.
Chris Weens.
John G.
Hugo Sanchez.
Curtis LaRock.
And Dennis Scott. Thank you guys so much. If you would like to donate, patreon.com/comicbookclub, and enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming out to Comic Book Club Live. Please give it up for your hosts, Alex and Justin.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And that's our man of the booth, Boothman Prime.
Boothman Prime.
Oh, my gosh. There's like a button on the floor or something.
I know. What a mystery.
No, it's fun. There was a fun sketch comedy show in the theater before us.
We got to see
taught us
some
important things about fake
news.
Fake news.
It's great. Very topical.
Yeah, it was very
it's important
topical.
To be topical in everything you do. That's why we're obviously going to be talking about Logan, very fresh movie.
Yeah. No, we're not.
Oh, wait, are we missing somebody?
Yeah, we are. Usually there's a third guy that we've been doing the show for 10
years. Oh, my God, he stands right where I'm standing. This is so weird. I feel him.
Pete's out on the week when we're going to talk about Logan, and we're never going to talk about Logan again.
Yeah.
And that's really sad for Pete.
In fact, I think we're going to go so far as to completely redact Logan from our experience so that we may never even reference it or even talk about the character who, I think his name was Wolf-Areen or something. It's already fading. Yeah. It's already fading from my mind.
He's played by a huge jack.
Jacked man.
Huge jacked man.
Yeah, that's a.
I know that. And it's part of the Wyman series?
Yes, exactly. The Wymans. Yeah, it's a great sitcom family.
Well, anyway, it was a lovely comedy and I laughed at
I know. The romance is great.
Yes. We'll talk about it a little later. Actually, let's make a quick promise for our audience members in here and the people listening at home on the podcast. So Pete invariably, when he is not here for something like this, always insists. He's like, no, man, I don't care that it's 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
We got to talk about this thing. We got to talk about it. Let's pretend it never
exists. Yeah, it's gone. I'm not kidding. It's completely redacted.
We promise you guys, we're going to just like...
But honestly, everyone else is like, no, I want to hear his review. He's the one guy I want to know. But we're going to withhold it from you for as long as possible.
Yeah, there we go. This is going to be a nice prolonged torture. Speaking of prolonged torture, let's not prolong this torture anymore. Let's bring out our guests. I'm very excited to have them here. One is the host of the amazing show Kevin Geeks Out. The other is an incredible writer, done a ridiculous amount of stuff, including the ongoing, the currently going Briggs Land and Rebels. Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Barr and Brian Wood!
Yeah, look at this race. Wow, what a show. Great.
Excellent. Hello. Thank you, sir. Hello. Thank you.
Nice. Early victory lap. Great handshakes.
Kevin, you have not won yet. Don't you... A victory.
I'm just trying to get the crowd. We've got a nice big crowd here. I want to get everybody excited, get their energy up.
Get everybody loose.
Okay, all right, that's fair.
Yeah.
Let's talk to you first about your show, which I've been on before. It's a great show called Kevin Geeks Out. You do it twice a month. I think people can figure out from the name, but what's the idea of the show?
I would love you to describe it, because I'm realizing now I've been doing the show for years, and I haven't been explaining what it is.
I
think that's part of the problem. My marketing skills are pretty weak, so how would you describe it?
I would say an explosion of flavor. How about that?
That sounds good. A website called it like TED Talks for midnight movies, and I feel like it's like TED Talks is going to become this played out, you know, cultural touchstone.
You just have to own it now,
though. Okay, so it's like TED Talks.
Yeah, zeitgeist.
But it's about like pop culture-y stuff, and it's about ways of seeing and appreciating things on multiple levels. That it's not something is good or bad, but it can be all of these things at once, which I'm sure you guys deal with.
Hell yeah,
weekly.
Kevin geeks out, so you don't have to.
That's pretty good.
Because you do all the research and have all this layers of information.
It's true.
And
there are a lot of shows in the city where it's like, we're going to watch an episode of DuckTales. And then you're like, this is awful. Whereas at Kevin Geeks Out, we'll show you, like, at the upcoming show, we're going to show you a 10-minute cut-down of an episode of Wonder Woman. Because like the 58-minute episode of a 1973 Wonder Woman is kind of a slog.
You think there are some slow patches in that episode from the 70s?
In that one episode, yes.
She would get in. It took her like 10 minutes to get in a costume. She would just spin for
The whole pacing, commercial break. There was a different pace.
People had more time back then.
Yeah.
Instead of Twitter, they just wrote stuff.
Watching
in
one journal.
I was on, just to give you a little bit more explanation about the show, I was on the Batman Superman show before Batman v Superman.
Did an
came out.
excellent piece about Clark Kent and Superman.
Oh,
it was
thank you very much. And basically, it was a bunch of people went up, gave short speeches about Batman v Superman using. It was at the Nighthawk Theater here in New York. For those of you outside New York, there's a bunch of artisanal theaters, movie theaters.
Ooh, artisanal theaters.
It is. Yes. Like, including,
like they're aged in a cheese cave for a while, and then they're finally presented.
Cool. And so, you know, people are sitting there having drinks. They're watching this big movie screen. It's a really nice theater. And people gave a very, very focused talks about Batman and Superman using audiovisual aids. And yes. It's a lot of fun. And it's...
Yeah, you go to kevingeeksout.com. We have, like, trailers for the show, and I'll be putting up more multimedia from it. And you know, it's the thing, like with this, you guys have it built to be a good podcast, but it's an audiovisual show. It's hard to like videotape it, and those things always look crappy. Or if you do like a sketch comedy show that's videotaped, it's like, it just, you really had to be there.
Exactly, you had to be there live
so
for the fake news.
So I'm guessing, just based on what you're saying, you're doing one tying into the Wonder Woman movie coming up. Is that right?
No, the one that's coming out is about gorillas tying into the new Kong movie. But there are in one portion of the show looks at the history of on comic books, how the Julius Schwartz was an editor for DC Comics, and he found that if you put a gorilla on the front cover, the title would sell a lot quicker. And then all the artists, they'd be like, we want the gorilla this month. And he was like, only one a month. Only one gorilla a month. So we're looking at the history of gorillas on comic book covers, which leads into
hilarious.
The audience gets to choose, do we watch a cut down of the Wonder Woman gorilla episode or the Incredible Hulk gorilla episode?
Oh, man.
The Hulk one is kind of a better episode, but season one of the Wonder Woman TV show was set in the 1940s, so it is a Nazi gorilla. It's not just a gorilla. It's a Nazi gorilla.
What a Sophie's choice.
Yeah.
For us.
So the audience will choose which one we watch.
When was the gorilla late to the Nazi party or an early adopter?
What does that matter?
I'm just curious how a gorilla goes from being a regular apolitical gorilla to officially joining a fascist.
That's one of the big questions of our time is how does a gorilla fall into a thing like
exactly
that?
We should test for fascism, and then we can try to prevent it here in amongst humans.
Yeah, I think honestly our next president is probably a gorilla president.
A Nazi gorilla president.
Definitely.
Or great stuff.
Is this the sort of things you'll be getting into?
Exactly,
in
all
show?
This kind of stuff. Yeah, this kind of stuff is exactly. You've already gotten a taste of the burst of flavors that is Kevin Geeks Out.
I'm glad you're embracing them.
Cool. And so, once again, it's twice a month. It alternates between Alamo Drafthouse here in New York and Nighthawk
Cinema, also in New York. So we're serving a small portion of Brooklyn, but KevinGeeksOut.com has all the details.
But they're the two pillars of cool Brooklyn movie theaters, so you're crushing it.
Nice. All right, Brian, let's turn to you. You always have a ridiculous amount of stuff going on. There's two titles I think we can talk about in particular. I want to talk about Briggs Lad, because I've been loving this book. It seemed like going in that it was tailor-made for TV, and as it turned out, it is tailor-made for TV. I mean, AMC picked it up, and you've been working on it for the past year.
Yeah. First of all, I feel like I'm at a disadvantage because you all are talkers, and I'm the guy that picked the job where I sit alone in a room all day. So. But it's So I actually sold Briggs Land to AMC before I found a publisher for it, and that was sort of because AMC. It was a good lesson for me in keeping in touch with people, even if you think there's no point. So I had sort of made contact with AMC about 7 years ago because they wanted my DMZ book, which was a Vertigo book at the time, and they couldn't get it. But you know, I would sort of have coffee with the guy at AMC twice a year. You know, I mean, he's a super nice guy. He's a friend of mine, and eventually, you know, I was showing him every comic book pitch that I had, just on the crazy, weird off chance that he was going to be like, that's the one we want.
What if we change one letter from DMZ, if it's like a P or something? Yeah. Can we do it then? Is that cool? Yeah.
By the way, we should mention, not to keep interrupting you, DMZ is an awesome book.
Yeah, one of our favorites from years and years.
About, I'm blanking out exactly how to pitch it.
New York becomes a demilitarized zone in the battle between two factions in America.
It's the second American Civil War, is what I say, where Manhattan is the demilitarized zone.
If I had to boil it down, it's sort of like a burst of flavor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there you go. Where Manhattan is a burst
of flavor. So you pitch them and pitch them and eventually...
I didn't even so much pitch them. I'm just like, hey, look at this comic book pitch. And he looked at it and be like, it's not our audience. And it really, AMC's changed a lot. The TV marketplace has changed a lot. So I was feeling really, really good about this Briggsland pitch, which had a different name back then. This is a couple years ago. And I sent it to him, and he was like, you know what? I don't know. It's kind of interesting. We're looking for sort of like this, which is, it's like broadly, it's like a organized crime story. And they're like, there's something about it that like isn't quite right. And I was like, all right, whatever. But then, I put it away and came back to it and changed, for myself, I changed the gender of the main character. And suddenly it was like a billion times better, I thought. So I brought it back to my guy and I'm like, look, just take a look at this again. And he was like, all right, this is what we want. And it wasn't even a comic then. It was just a comic book pitch, which is very different from a TV pitch.
Can I ask you a question? If it hadn't been published yet, what does that mean for intellectual property? Do you own the characters, or does AMC own it?
I own it.
Yay.
The only reason why it's unusual that it wasn't a comic yet is they didn't have... They had no idea what the story was going to be written like. They hadn't seen anything yet. Usually they like to see a published book because it proves there's an audience for it. They can sort of see the story progress and they get a sense of me as like a writer and where a potential TV series could go.
They like fun pictures.
Right, of course.
Everybody pictures. I used to work freelance for AMC and they... particularly on the marketing side, but across the network, you can imagine this from Walking Dead, but they're very hooked into comics, that even things that weren't Walking Dead, they were always trying to find some sort of comic integration for it, some way that they could put something on the website, work with an artist, work with a writer. So
it's less movies for TV people. It's more TV for comics people.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, wow. Back in the day, yes. And sorry, just so you guys know about Briggsland, I'm blanking on the exact world. It's not exactly a cult, and it's not exactly a survivalist clan, kind of.
Yeah, it's sort of... the original pitch was about a militia compound, like a militia in the stockpiling gun sense. And I had done a whole bunch of research into that world for previous projects, and always thought it was like fascinatingly crazy and messed up and interesting. And I couldn't believe there wasn't a comic about it. So I sort of like, ideas always like hang around in the back of my head for years. And finally, when I wrote it out, I was basically, I'll say it, I was basically writing a Sopranos set in this sort of secessionist militia culture. And that's when it had like a very Tony Soprano male lead. And it basically felt like a mafia show, like we've seen, a bunch of times. And I liked it, but there was something missing. So I always say I just switched it so it was Carmella was running the family.
Yeah, yeah.
And that combined with the sort of like that extremist culture suddenly created a lot more story tension. A lot of story ideas came out of the fact that it was the mother that was running it.
It's kind of amazing to me that it didn't start that way, because the patriarch of the family before the book even starts is sent to jail, which leaves this power vacuum where the matriarch is trying to take back the power. Her sons are all kind of trying to pull power in different directions, and it's so intrinsic to the idea. It's fascinating that wasn't where it started.
Yeah, I just sort of, without even thinking about it, I'm like, it's a guy running it because it's a mafia story. And, you just kind of assume that, or I just assume that. And, I mean, obviously I'm glad I thought to make that switch, because it got me the TV deal. Obviously, it made it a better, yeah. Better book.
So you've been working on that for a while. I saw you post recently. You have three entirely different versions of the pilot.
I did. AMC moves slow, which is good. I mean, I have written a previous pilot, which is unmade as to this day. But I'm kind of new to it, so I needed that time. I did like 7 drafts of the story, which is what they call like the outline version, not the actual script. To
those
get it
fun.
All right, and I was writing the comic at the same time, and it was really messing with my head, because I'm like, I'm trying to adapt something for TV that doesn't actually exist yet, because I'm still writing it. So eventually I just had to stop working on the TV show, get a whole bunch of comics done. So then I had the sort of the context and the perspective to figure out what to adapt.
Did you, I don't know if you know him or anything, but Robert Kirkman is going through the same experience where he's ongoing writing The Walking Dead at the same time as the show on, and they're at very different points. Did you talk to any other comic book writers like him about trying to do both things at the same time?
I didn't speak to him. No. I haven't spoken to anybody about that. I think it's pretty, I mean, I think even Kirkman had a whole bunch of Walking Dead comics done first. Mm-hmm. I didn't know of any examples of someone trying to simultaneously launch a show and launch the source material at the same time. It's all good. Like I don't mean to sound like it was like a pain in the ass, because it was like, I mean, after 20 years of writing comics, the chance to learn something new was really cool. I mean, I never felt like I didn't have anything to learn, but I wasn't aware that it was going to be this much of a learning curve, and it was going to be so much fun.
Yeah. What's happening at this point? I mean, what stage of the project are you at?
I'm just doing these revisions of the pilot screenplay. So, like I said, AMC moves a little slow, but in theory, any day now, it'll get kicked to like the next level, which is like setting up a writer's room. Yeah. And then we actually start writing beyond the pilot.
That's awesome. Yeah. Moving from one more book to another, you have Rebels out with Dark Horse, which is about the Revolutionary War, right?
Right. Yeah. It's a historical fiction book about the Revolutionary War, which doesn't seem as random now because of Hamilton.
Yeah.
It was pretty random. I always kind of laugh, or I don't know if laugh is the right word, but when I was launching Rebels, this is the second book we're doing. We did a first book a couple of years ago. I had to go to this thing called Comics Pro, which is like a comic book retailer conference, and I was going to get up in front of a whole bunch of book buyers and talk about this brand new book, Rebels. And so I was trying to like explain, I was trying to like pitch it to them in a way that this isn't boring history, this is history everybody likes. There's this TV show about Washington called A Turn, there's the Assassin's Creed video games. Like I had several examples. And that morning, my wife texts me from home and says, there's an article in the New York Times about this hip-hop musical about Hamilton. You should mention that along with everything else. I'm like, all right, whatever. And that was Hamilton. It had just started its initial run, you know, downtown. Nice. So I had written this book before Hamilton. Now trying to write it again, it's really hard. I mean, it's like I can't get that.
Because all the characters are speaking in rhyme.
Right. It's like I'm writing a story and Hamilton's in mine, but he's like a white guy, and that seems weird to me now.
Yeah. You know?
Like it doesn't look right.
History
it doesn't look right anymore.
Yeah. Sorry, quick question. Can you get me tickets?
I can. Yes.
Okay, all right.
I'm actually seeing it for the first time in a couple weeks.
Oh, so, man.
I just want tickets to your wherever you write. Can I just sit there and just like watch? And I'm sure you're.
I'm sure it's
music.
Awesome.
Yeah,
there's,
sure it does.
There's
sure
a lottery.
You can fold the laundry while I write.
Oh, hell
that's,
all, yeah.
That's what I have to do.
That's it. Those are your two tasks?
Yeah, basically.
Between this and there's another book that I want to talk about in a second, you're definitely hardcore going in on military or war things. What's interesting to you about that in particular?
It wasn't anything I set out to do. I don't know if because I did DMZ, I sort of set myself down that path. I have a lot of friends who are like ex-military who may be influencing me without me really thinking about it. I don't see Rebels so much as a military book, even though it obviously takes place in and around that war. I see it more as like, not to make it sound super boring, but it's like a civics book, you know? Like it's about, you know, sort of like the wonderful idea that was this American government, even though obviously we're not, it reads much better on paper, our government, than it does in practice. It's important, you know, like I sort of like that like frontier can do DIY spirit of it all. And so in my mind, I don't really classify that as a war book, even though I guess it has its moments.
Well, there's another book that touches on military a little bit, Aliens Defiance, which is one of... What?
That's a straight
just think
up
it's
military
funny.
Book.
You're a bit of a reach there. Maybe
no, it is.
No, yeah. To
that's
be
a
fair,
straight up military.
No, it is. I know, but
yeah. I mean,
you're going from like the Revolutionary War, like militia. And yeah. Then,
listen,
I don't know how many turn papers I did on Alien on Ripley's.
There's a lot
stand in Aliens.
I in elementary school.
Can
I
you
a
get
whole
there in five
on
steps?
Alien
yeah, exactly. I could get there. I could get there.
I got a segue somehow.
You can. Yeah. Oh, cool. I'm sorry, I just stepped on.
Yeah, please don't. I love this book. I think it's great. I mean, for those who aren't reading the book, it essentially, this is very much boiled down, but it's essentially like, hey, what if everybody in the Aliens movies wasn't stupid and instead fought back? And
stupid in the movies.
Well, there's something which we talked about in particular with the first issue where it takes all the tropes of the Aliens movies and immediately pushes back at them. And how did you approach it? What was your idea there?
That went through a lot of drafts. When I was first approached for that book, Dark Horse is like, great news, we can finally use Ellen Ripley in our comics. Like, that's been off the table for years and years and years. Forever, really. We can finally do it. Do you want to write that? And I'm like, absolutely. So, yeah. And then that Neil Blomkamp filmmaker, was that guy?
Yeah.
But tweeted out that stuff about how he wants to make a movie, or he did tweet that out, and then they're like, Ellen Ripley is off the table.
Because are you serious?
Because we might make a movie about it.
One
so
tweet.
Like, but at that point, I'd committed to it, so I'm like, well, how about her daughter, who's in that Aliens video game? Because if I can't get her, I can get her daughter. It's close. It's still a Ripley. It's cool.
Yeah.
And they're like, yes. And then a couple weeks later, they're like, no, you can't, because we might make a video game. A sequel to it.
Oh man, that's
so. But at that point, I was like committed to it.
So
I'm like, well, Jesus. So I was. So then I came up with what I ended up going with, which was like sort of like one of the colonial Marines, but not the '80s gung-ho types that we saw in the movie, which is not bad, but that's been done. Like I sort of wanted like a real rookie. Sort of young recruit that's in way over her head. And aside from that, we tried to mimic the original film as much as we could. We picked the right ship. We have the synthetic dude. You know, all the, you know, I tried to encourage the colorist to sort of match that. You know how in like old 70s sci-fi movies is all those, everything's white, but it's like a little off white?
Yeah.
You know, I wanted that color, made sure all the buttons and the lights and everything were like period correct. And just tried to sort of evoke that same feeling that I got from the first film. But obviously, instead of a bunch of like blue collar, like manual laborers stuck on a ship, it was like a blue collar marine.
One of the things that's so great about it, I think, though, is that you expect in these aliens movies and almost every alien comic book I've read, and I've read a ton of them, but I love all of them, but they end up in a situation, they're like, okay, things are going to be in our control, and they very quickly get out of their control, and they freak out and all die, and the girl runs away, and the android goes crazy. And in this one, she fights back, and they beat the alien, and the android doesn't betray her, and they're like, let's go kill the rest of the aliens, which seems like... I kind of couldn't believe that nobody had done that before. It seemed like such a next step.
Yeah.
And it's great. So did you, when you were approaching that, did you think about taking it past that logical conclusion that every other alien story had gone to?
I didn't really, because like I said, we're really trying to evoke that original film. The problem that I ran into immediately that I didn't see coming, but I had to deal with really quickly, is that the movies are great because it's like a finite thing and it ends. But when you do a monthly comic where there's a mandate where you have to have an alien fight in every issue, it robs you a little bit of
Keep being surprised every time.
Exactly.
It's like, shit, the aliens,
Like, and when you're stuck on a ship with like a small cast, like how many versions of an alien fight can you really have?
Yeah. No, that's
so
cool.
That became a real challenge. So, I mean, I would introduce characters as I went. I really tried to, you know, sort of flesh out the characters' backstories as much as I could. Because again, it's like, I mean, I'm sure I shouldn't say this, but kind of when you've seen one alien fight, you've kind of seen them all, you know.
Well, and
it's about what happens around it, you know. And
what if I told you that alien was going to fight a predator?
Whoa! You should be a movie exec. The trailer for the new Aliens movie is very much like, we are going to be safe here,
right.
And then they all get. Terrified.
And what's awesome about that is like it's a new cast. The location is visually really, really cool. So that kind of like, you know, makes the fight
feel kind of the same thing. Are you, Kevin, are you a fan of the Alien series?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Cool.
Wait. What are you expecting, a no there?
It's okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, they're
great.
Cool,
but
man.
Again, what I like about the series is that it takes it beyond that. And even a lot of the comics are very much stuck in this. We just escaped the alien planet. Ah, now we crash landed back on the alien planet. Now we escaped the alien planet. Ah, we crash landed again. And now we're escaping, but the alien's on board. Let's crash land on another planet. And here, for those who aren't reading it again, they are going around the galaxy trying to hunt down and exterminate all the aliens. And things still do go wrong and go terrible, but it feels like there's very much an effort to make the characters a couple of ticks smarter than, say, the guy in Prometheus who's like, hey, I'm on an alien planet. I'm encountering alien life for the first time. Let me poke it as hard as I possibly can.
Yeah, well, it's a first reaction to a lot of situations.
Well, that's what the bad guys do. My story is set really early. It's before the events of the second film. So no one on Earth has heard what happened to Ellen Ripley's ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the aliens are like really unknown. They have a sense. They have some like fractured reports of there's something out there. But so when our characters meet the aliens, it's like completely unknown to them. So that sort of, I got a lot of story meat out of that, because they had to even figure out how to understand what they were looking at before they could fight it, you know, or at the same time as fighting it.
Cool. What else would you like to plug? What else is coming out that you'd like to talk about?
Those are the three big books I'm doing now. I'm also writing a Viking book at Image Comics called The Black Road.
Great book. I've been reading that.
I like the Vikings.
That is abundantly clear.
Yes. I'm really sort of pushing myself into TV writing. There's going to be, hopefully, a lot of announcements about upcoming things. I'm going to LA in a couple of weeks.
As somebody who has a background in comic books, are you getting involved with like the storyboarding, or how visually are you delivering your material? Because you have a comics background, compared to like writing a script for television?
I am just writing. We're not quite at a stage where I could apply any visual skills to anything. It's still pretty early on everything. I went to art school. I'm trained as an artist. I drew some of my early comics, but I'm slow and, you know, I could never make the art thing stick in terms of earning a living. So strictly writing.
All right, cool. We'll definitely check out all of that stuff. And we're going to move on with our next section, which we like to call the stack.
Yeah.
And in the stack, we're going to talk about some comics we particularly like this week. Let's kick it off talking about America number one from Marvel Comics. Pass that over to you guys if you want to take a look.
Yeah,
Justin, you want to talk about this book?
America's never been more popular. America is what everyone's talking about, so that's why this comic is great.
Because of Hamilton.
Yeah, exactly. America is a character that I first was reading in Young Avengers back in the day. She's on the Ultimates right now. She can punch star-shaped holes through in between universes, basically. This book is... the art's amazing in this book. It's super fun. It's very, like... She punches a hole, it goes back in time, and by the end of the book is punching Hitler in the face.
Yeah. I will say I had a little bit of a hard time grasping onto the plot of the book because it jumps from one thing to another so quickly. Yeah. But it's all fun stuff. Like you said, it ends with her punching Hitler with Captain America back in the day.
Yeah.
In the middle, she's fighting this futuristic caveman in an ice school. And then they have... She's going to this new college, and they have a whole two-page spread of a map of the school and everything that's going on there that's super fun.
It's very, like, old school, like, early 90s Marvel comics, where it's like, people gotta know what the map looks like of the school.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I don't know what the idea of this book is yet, but I think that's okay because there's so many different things going on here. It's just... It's a cauldron of ideas.
A cauldron? Whoa, terrifying.
What'd you guys think about this book, Kevin?
I was reading it before we started. The one thing that does stand out, I love that we get to see Hitler get punched in the end, but it is that he's just standing in the middle of a battlefield, where I think traditionally he's behind closed doors being socked in the jaw.
He's more of a bunker guy.
Yeah, he's a bunker. A creature of the bunker, not just out in the field. So that was a little convenient, but I'm gonna give him a pass because I love the color palette in this book. I think it's so colorful, and the shades of blue are really beautiful. There's a lot of nice candy colors, and it's just, you know, girl wants to go to college. Who can fault a young woman wanting to go to college? It's a positive story.
Nobody can.
She has a great relationship with her girlfriend that it gets a little bit messed up here, but you can tell they love each other. Like, I like all the characters are well represented. I do think this is sort of halfway between the Squirrel Girl side of Marvel and the Hawkeye-ification of Marvel. It feels like a middle point where it's like fun and freewheeling, but there's stuff happening for these characters.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Does this say why her punches are star-shaped holes?
No.
Because it looks like she might be punching a star-shaped hole into Hitler.
What a great way to win him over.
Yeah. There's a thing that happens halfway through the issue, or towards the beginning of the issue, where she's fighting a villain and punches the villain, and the villain just collapses into stars. So there's something going on with her power, and she doesn't know what it is yet.
It's an awesome creative team.
Yeah. It's great. It's really weird and funny and interesting. And there's usually a deficit of ideas, or like you get one idea per comic book, but this... is a cauldron of ideas.
You're really pushing that.
That's my hashtag thing. That's my hashtag cauldron of ideas. The Walking Dead, number 165 from Image Comics. Some big stuff goes down in this issue. Can we talk about some spoilers? Is that all right?
Yeah, I think we should.
Yeah,
are people still reading the Walking Dead comic book? Okay. Well, there was one that could have been a dog barking. There's one person that yelled.
Possibly a whooping bird, I think.
Sort of a loose parrot, perhaps.
Yes.
Are people watching The Walking Dead television show? Okay, there's some more of that. Great.
So there's one person in the audience who's reading the book, two people who are watching the TV show.
That is a
big
cultural
failure.
Icon.
Huge failure. Huge failure.
We'll talk about what happens at the end of this book. This book, there's so many characters, it's almost hard to keep track of them all in the comic. But they've been waging this war with the Whisperers, who are people that just wear zombie faces, so they're hard to spot in the apocalypse. And they've been winning. All of a sudden, there's a flood. The largest herd of zombies attacks their village, and they're winning. And it's all about sort of the logistics of their last couple issues have been like how they herd the zombies in different ways. But there's this huge last moment where Andrea, who in the comics has been together with Rick for quite a while, she has what looks like a bite mark on her neck.
Ah!
Yeah.
So what do you think about this? Do you think she actually got bit?
I think so. I mean, it's not about, like, Robert Kirkman doesn't seem to mind killing people that we like in general.
Yeah.
Even, like, close family and friends of mine, he's shown up and straight up murdered
Jesus,
them.
Jesus, that's crazy.
Yeah, he's a nightmare. He's a real problem out there.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. I'm still suspicious about it. Until we see actually Andrea dead, there was that point when Rick thought he'd gotten hit with a zombie blood-tipped arrow. Mm-hmm. I know this is a really long time ago, and we're like, oh, Rick's dead. Rick's totally dead. And they're like, no, nah, just kidding, you're fine.
That looks like a bite.
It looks like a bite, but maybe she got like a tear.
You ever looked at an injury on yourself and been like, is that a bite or not?
I all the time. All the time. Like, I just look over and I'm like, huh, there's blood pouring out of my arm or hand. You never have that?
No, I guess. Well, your children are older, so maybe that's the issue.
Yeah, well, they're always taking bites out of me and stuff. I don't know. This book is always consistently very good, and this is a good issue, particularly when they are dealing with the logistics of zombie attacks. It's really interesting and fun. Kevin, did you have a chance to check this out?
I would say it's a crock pot of ideas.
Great.
There's a lot
really
going
on.
I did not have a chance to read this one, but I do like the onomatopoeia that's used for the gunshots. There's some nice pacow.
Yeah.
So I like the gunshot sound effects.
Great sound effects.
That's great.
Yeah.
Brian, are you a fan of The Walking Dead?
I am continually amazed at the overall franchiseness of the whole thing, like how big it's gotten, because I was around when that was new and it was like a tiny little thing, and people thought, oh, the zombie thing's over now. What is this book coming out? And then, you know, I feel like it's the ultimate crossover comic, because every single person I ever seemed to meet watches this, regardless as if they're comic book guys or dads at my kid's school or or the ex-military guys at my gym. They all just are like obsessed with it. So kudos to everybody.
AMC is a good network to get involved.
I know.
Yeah, they are. You're Briggsland. There's going to be like huge parties and mobile games and things like that.
in my dreams. I feel like, I don't know if that particular kind of lightning strikes twice.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. Fingers crossed.
I was just in Las Vegas for the first time. There were so many AMC casino games. There were
really?
Breaking Bad games. There were Walking
Dead
games.
When I'm gambling, I love
some of that
like
sweet,
a dark.
I like. I'm really just gambling for the brands.
Yeah. Was there a Into the Badlands game?
There was
no.
What about the comic book men gambling? Was there any of that? That would be fun. I'd love to just throw some dice on a Kevin Smith themed craps table.
Yeah. was there Talking Dead blackjack?
Yeah, that's fun stuff. Yeah. Chris Hardwick is a dealer at a lot of Vegas casinos.
Is he?
Yeah,
I don't know where he finds
stuff.
The time.
He's
it's
everywhere,
crazy.
Man. He's very busy.
It was a Chris Hardwick bowling themed craps table game. It was just a vortex.
Dangerous.
That's amazing. I don't know.
I will say it. Just last thing on Walking Dead, the comic. There's been so much just like. It's like playing Sim City, and so the comic is like reading the news. It's like, oh, look at this. They have bullets, and they're building a Ferris wheel at the place. It's like very much, it's not at all what it sort of was so long ago, but I still read it.
Yeah. Do you feel like they're getting back to that place, though? I mean, they have this flood of zombies, as you put it, that's destroying Alexandria, destroying all the civilization. You have the other plot line that's going on is the saviors in the sanctuary who were their allies have decided this is the time to go fucking kill everybody.
Yeah.
So it's starting to break down.
Right, but I do, like, none of the characters seem scared ever. They're all just fine. They're like, these zombies, we just got to move them. It's like dealing with, like, vegetation on your lawn. It's like, oh, they got too many dandelions, we got to cut off the heads so you can't see the flowers.
Would you like them to get back to a place where they were scared?
Yes.
Okay.
It's this book was scary for a long, long time.
Right.
But now the characters have been through so much that, like say that this ant, this bite on Andrea's neck is a zombie bite. Rick's going to be sad, but, like, what's the... He's been through every iteration of this. Like, what's the next emotional step?
I don't know. He's lost his hand and his legs, or probably his nose. Like, his nose will fall off.
I don't think
sadness.
It translates directly in that
way. I don't know. I don't know how sadness works. Let's move on with the last issue we're going to talk about. Superman, number 18 from DC Comics. So, big stuff happening in this issue.
Yeah.
The continuity of Superman, super weird right now.
Yeah.
Super complicated. This is, I think, trying to slim it down a little bit.
So, what happened is Superman, he died.
Right, again.
Again, he's often dead, for those of you that don't know. And this is a Superman, Lois Lane from another dimension, came to the Earth. They have a son who's named, right. who's the Super Son. He's friends with Damian Wayne, who's Batman's kid.
Right.
And then now a new Clark Kent is showing up. There's also a Superman in China who's just like a regular guy who all of a sudden has Superman powers.
Wait, you got to mention Clark Kent.
And then Clark Kent, he's a guy who, Clark Kent, our Superman who we're following in this book, isn't Clark Kent. He's just chilling out. But Clark Kent is another dude who shows up in this issue, and we're like, who's this guy? And the Crypto's like, he smells similar, but the difference, so it's a little weird.
Oh, there we go. So you're all caught up now.
Oh, and Superman can fly.
Right, yes. He's very strong.
I didn't cover that.
So this issue, this is Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason, and they are, I would argue, the most underrated team working for DC.
I agree. Yeah, right? They're so good. Any book they touch. That's why, like, I'm such a huge fan of this book, and this issue particularly. So as I was speed talking, a Clark Kent figure shows up, and I think this book is sort of pointing toward the next big DC crossover. It seems like that's what it's going to be about, is this, like, lack of Superman and who's gathering Superman and all that. But this Clark Kent shows up, and then their son starts, Superboy, starts to vanish. He catches on, and this blue flame overtakes him, and he starts to vanish. And they're at parts of their house do as well, their photo albums. And it was hard. I mean, I just had a kid, so, like, watching a child disappear in a comic book, I was like, oh, fuck, it's just so stressful. But it's just, they're so good at, and they've worked together for so long. The pacing, the visuals, the way they tell the story, it's just, they're so good together.
Yeah, it's great. This book is very good. I mean, we'll see how it pans out in terms of the crossover, but
of the vanishing child.
Right, in terms of the vanishing child.
Yeah, I read it, and I had not been following the series with Superman Rebirth. So the first half of it, really, it's just trying to make heads and tails of it. And then I get to the disappearing child stuff, and it just, on a gut emotional level, totally sucked me in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
So good.
All right, that's it for the stack. Yay! All right, guys, we're going to move to our next section, which is my favorite section because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions.
Yeah, it is.
And for that, I'm going to come out to you guys, and you can ask absolutely anything. It could be something for one of our amazing guests, one of the things for us, and Justin is going to give you guys a free comic.
That's a free comic.
Yes, your hand, I saw it shoot up first. What's your name? What's your question?
Hi, my name is Brandon Medina, and I have a question about gorillas.
Oh, great.
So, when Jane we're equipped
to handle this.
When Jane got... No, how did Julius Schwartz find that out? That's what I wanted to know. How did he figure that out? And I was wondering, just in general, then, how do you figure things out like that? Are there any things that any of you were surprised? Like, if I put this on the cover of a comic, it sells?
There's one thing. It's not related at all. So, first of all, I'm not sure how Julius Schwartz figured it out.
He just looked at those numbers. I guess
the numbers don't lie. And then the only other thing I can think of that somebody pointed out to me that I can never look at the same way again is in a commercial, whenever they show like a bachelor's apartment, there's the pizza box or there's takeout Chinese food. There's all these cliche kind of imageries. The single bowling pin, staple of like a dude's apartment, right?
Yeah.
Somebody who works in TV told me that is a stand-in for a bong. That in TV commercials, that in a Snickers commercial, they can't show a bong, but they can show a single bowling pin, which represents the bong. And once somebody told me that, I was like, that's why they're always there.
Huh.
Yeah.
But what, how does that work on us as people? Like, I don't. When I see a bowling pin commercial, I'm like, it's fuck, like, I gotta get high right now. Oh man, I want to get high. Like, I don't know what the it, like. I to me,
know.
It's just like, oh,
it's a representation. It's a stand-in. It's yeah. a suggestion. That's so that's the only other thing I can think of.
But the bowling pin's always in, like, in the back of the room. It's not like it's on the table
soft
in
focus.
Front.
Yeah,
front
soft
it's
focus.
Not like there's a dude holding it. Like, yeah. Is this commercial over yet? We turn these cameras off. I'm gonna get so high.
Brian, when you're putting together comic, is there anything in particular you've found you want to push? I know you're not specifically dictating the art for the cover, but is there something that you're like, you got to put front
I often am. Or yeah. I'm at least giving notes. That gorilla thing is like, I didn't know where it came from, but it's like a given. I mean, it's kind of like a joke.
Did you say
thing.
Gibbon or given?
Given.
What?
I'm not that clever.
That's terrible.
That
is terrible. I'm sorry.
What has currently replaced the gorilla on the cover? What's the new gorilla on the cover?
Honestly,
for the 21st century?
I don't know, because it's
millennials.
I mean, like DC might have their thing, but there's so many comics now that it's kind of hard to spot the patterns. Okay. I don't have. Interesting stories. There are just some basic rules about putting like faces on the covers. An old editor of mine at Vertigo used to say, "You can't go wrong with putting like a cool girl, because everybody likes a cool girl." And I don't mean like a slutty looking girl, but just an
someone
interesting
who looks
girl.
Cool.
Because guys like them, girls like them, men like them, women like. I mean, everybody likes an interesting girl on the cover. So I've used that at times, deliberately.
Yeah.
But that, there's that rule. There's always good to go to put a face on the cover. I've had editors say, as opposed to just like a location or a vehicle or something.
So would you say like a cool girl gorilla would be the ultimate cover?
Yeah, there's that DC book. I don't know what it's called, but there's a gorilla and a girl in it. There's like a Vertigo version
smart.
Of that somewhat recently.
Yeah, there's nothing
I've been
in the
trying to
of the
think
comic.
Of what it's called. Since you mentioned
it. I only
it's a
know
blank
gorilla.
Comic.
Yeah, it's completely empty on the inside.
He's like
but
a
they
reporter.
Sell, so,
he's like a reporter. He has a pencil behind his ear. What's it called?
Angel in the Eighth.
So that's nice. Like that. Why that isn't like a billion-dollar franchise, I have no idea.
There you go.
How many stories can you tell?
Great question.
I've heard Batman's good on covers too, very popular.
Batman?
Yeah.
Who's that? Is that a character?
I don't know. I think it's like an animal.
It's an animal, okay, like a bat.
Yeah.
That pretends to be a man. I get it. That sounds dumb. What's your name? What's your question?
My name is Pablo. Hello, guys.
Great.
In relation to that previous discussion here, what do you consider the next big thing to put on covers in comic books?
The next big thing? The future of covers.
I think
holograms.
I've been thinking that overt product placement is long overdue in comics, and I know that sounds bad, but in my Briggsland comic, I had to find I was trying to communicate to my British artist how big American pickup trucks can get, you know? Because he kept drawing them really
so
small,
funny.
Like they're really low, and I'm like, no, these things are huge. And I tried to find pictures online, and eventually figured out that that GMC has the most American-looking pickup trucks of all time, yeah. So I keep sending him GMC pictures, and after a while, I'm like, "Why isn't GMC paying us to put their pickup trucks in the comic? Because I'd take that money."
Yeah,
in
definitely.
A second. So I keep waiting for. I mean, I'm sure there has been product placement here or there, but I keep waiting for it to become.
I feel
a
like
thing.
Car companies are still behind the times because there is so much where they're like, "Look at this." Like Kia with all this Walking Dead spikes on it. It was like, that's not what we want. Just put a regular car and then we'll think of that as a car. And then that's what we'll buy eventually.
Right.
Like, speaking as a writer, if someone's drinking a bottle of beer in their comic, I'll take a couple bucks.
It that's is exactly surprising
put a label
that hasn't
on it.
And I get thirsty.
Yeah.
And especially.
Well, there's always this thing that takes me out of the comics where it's always some made-up word, particularly for internet companies, where it's like, oh, do you watch TubeU or whatever? And it instantly takes me out of the story every single time that happens.
In Riverdale, Jughead uses, like, sleuthu, where there was some Google search engine for sleuthing that I just saw.
Glamazon.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that's something, to your point, where I'm sure they've done outreach about this, so I wonder if I wonder if, yeah, they're drinking a beer in a comic and it happens to be Miller Lite or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just finally get the Hostess fruit pies on the cover.
Yeah.
Yes.
Out of the back.
Applause break.
Out of the back pages right onto the cover.
I just want to mention who reads Walking Dead? Woo! Who watches Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Hostess fruit pies.
Yeah! Those are my favorite fruit pies.
Oh, my God.
Who has good childhood memories of things?
Woo! I mean, obviously all of us. Yeah, obviously all of us.
Amazing. All right, you're going to get some free comics. Let's get another question to user right there. Come on up. What's your name? What's your question?
My name is Kevin. I'm going to go back to the gorilla thing.
Audiences. Well, it works on covers and with audiences, apparently.
Well, in the history of comics, who are your favorite ape characters, and I'll even give, who are your favorite non-ape animal characters?
I thought you were just going to say, in general, non-ape characters.
Yeah, your non-ape characters.
Geez, that's really hard. I only like ape characters.
Because I've been looking at a lot of the covers, doing the research for the Kevin Geeks Out. Monkey Madness is this month's show. There is a guy who appears on a cover. I've only seen the cover. I haven't read the book. But he's called the Mod Gorilla Boss. And dresses in a mod suit. And I forget who he's fighting. I forget who he's fighting.
Probably Flash.
Probably Flash. He's great. And then there's a great 1940s book about a talking, Nazi gorilla. There's a relationship between Nazis and gorillas where there's a young lady who's battling a talking Nazi gorilla who wears the armband and boots. Really, really terrific. And
boots.
Then they spoil it. I don't know why. This is a big spoiler. In the end of the story, after everyone's been carted away by the police, they're like, oh, it was a guy in a gorilla suit. I was like, why do you gotta go there? Why? Why did you have to ruin that?
That's so easy.
So that was very disappointing for me.
Brian, do you have a favorite gorilla character?
Well, I was going to say, I feel like I can't keep quiet, and I have actually written a Nazi gorilla comic book.
Oh, my God. You haven't said who you're talking about.
I was like,
should I?
Should I not? Is it going to raise more questions that I'll answer?
I mean,
I've got a bunch.
Definitely.
I actually had a World War II Nazi. It was for the motion comic company Made Fire. They have a character who's sort of like a Hellboy kind of character. And I set it in the Pacific in World War II. So they were actually Imperial Japanese gorillas. I'm sorry.
Imperial Japanese gorillas.
Now I'm thinking about it.
Perhaps more fascist than the other.
They were Axis monkeys.
Axis monkeys.
and there's I offered no explanation as to why they were. And amazing. No one asked. So I think it's the kind of thing everybody just buys into.
And were they gorillas, monkeys, orangutan?
I don't know.
Okay.
They were like a Planet of the Apes type, silverback type.
Silverback gorilla.
I don't know. I was afraid to say. I don't know if I know the difference exactly. I'm not a monkey guy.
Obviously. That's right. You don't have to.
No, that's right. I will say I had a conversation last night with my wife arguing about gorillas.
I'm like, what is going on? What's going on in this world?
I don't know. Well, very late. We were watching last week's Flash, where a bunch of gorillas attack Central City.
Yeah.
And she turned to me at the end. She was like, is this supposed to be a serious thing in the comic books?
Yeah.
Because this is really silly. And
it is.
And it was. I mean, like, it is kind of silly, but I will say what I said to her is, like, specifically in Geoff Johns' run of The Flash, Gorilla Grodd is terrifying. Like, he invades and takes over people's mind, forces them to do things they don't want to do, eats brains and constantly threatens to do it. And I feel like a lot before that, he was kind of treated a little sillily. And after that, they focused too much on the eating brains thing, where he's like, exclusively, I am a gorilla who eats brains, and that's all I do.
Yeah.
But for that span of time, it's a great character.
Yeah, I don't know how many other main character gorillas there are.
Well, there's, what's his name? Mala and the Brain. Is it Mala and the Brain? Yeah, Monsieur Mala and the Brain.
And Terry
Moore's
Motor Gorilla.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
The gorilla in the Justice League on James Robinson's
run. Yeah, that was a Grodd City escapee. What was his name?
Con-Gorilla.
Con-Gorilla, yeah.
Long-time DC character from, like, he was originally Congo Bill, and then he...
Right. Yeah, not my favorite characters. For non-gorilla animal characters, I mean, Frog Thor is very fun.
Yeah. Frog.
Very good.
Cool. I think we can take one more question. I saw one more hand at you, sir, all the way in the back come up. I can't see who it is. I'm sure it's somebody I'm not going to get angry. Oh, God damn it!
You know what? And I had something really nice to say about you, because I really, truly
don't
agree with your comment about Tomasi and Gleason. So much so that now I want to ask, what is another underrated creator that...
Oh, great.
You know? Or who you feel is underrated.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Brian Wynn.
Wow.
I could always be more rated.
Yeah, you need more ratings. You need more ratings.
What do you guys think? Underrated artists, writers, comic book creators?
I'm currently reading... I'm totally influenced by a book I'm currently reading. It's a... late 1930s comics by this guy Fletcher Hanks, who published some really insane superhero stuff. It's really bizarre. It's that thing when you read old comics that, like, they hadn't quite figured out what all the tropes and rules were.
Yeah.
So, like, really bizarre stuff happens, and the superhero takes these gangster villains and suspends them in the air, and then he's able to materialize the skeletons of people they killed, so they have to face the people they killed and feel bad about it. And it's just, like, treated completely normally. Like, that this is along the lines of, like, you're going to jail. So I'm really enjoying this Fletcher Hanks book.
Underrated, but truly insane.
Yeah,
insane.
Brian, do you have a favorite underrated...
Can I say an underrated project or book?
Sure.
That's great.
If the people that, like, know about Martha Washington, Frank Miller, love it. But not a lot of people know about this.
That's true.
And if there's any, like... I mean, not to make it all about me. But if there's any, like, one thing... I could say that was like a blanket influence over everything I've done and will do in the future. It's that book. I think they're about to put it back out again in some giant omnibus. But it was like Frank Miller and Dave Gibbons, who are the most
creators. Gibbons. So real. It's influencing everything.
I'm so many steps.
Yeah, you're deep into this gorilla, this monkey world.
Do you have one, Justin?
I do. Jason Latour is a writer and artist. He actually writes a bunch of books, a couple of books, and he is an artist on a bunch of different books. Really great on both sides, which is very rare. And he just came out with this book called Loose Ends, which is a sort of a Southern crime story, but he's the artist on Southern Bastards. He's been great for a long time, and I just really like his work.
I think he does colors on that book too.
He does. It's just like the two of them, I think,
I think it's Kelly Thompson who's doing Hawkeye right now, and did Gem right before that. That was also awesome, which you guys should check out. So that's more like a burgeoning talent.
Yeah. When you're burgeoning, you're underrated.
Exactly. Absolutely. All right. Thank you guys for your audience questions. All right, guys. Very quickly, before we run out of time, we're going to move on with our next section, which is Week in Geek.
Yeah.
And in Week in Geek, we're going to talk about one thing, which is Logan.
Yeah.
Logan, did you guys check out Logan? No?
I haven't yet, and I have a question for you guys, because I know you've seen it. We were talking
I haven't
seen it yet. People are going nuts about it. When people say it's a great movie, is it a great superhero movie? Or is it on a yardstick of cinema or the yardstick of superhero cinema?
That is a great question.
First off, though, it's quickly becoming the same yardstick, but
it is becoming
unfortunately perhaps for the future of film, but this is a great movie. This is a great story, I would say. I watched back to back. I watched X-Men Apocalypse for the first time, and then Logan morning and afternoon.
I don't know if that's a fair comparison.
But it is to, like, a lot of problems with superhero movies and a lot of, like, big epic movies in general, where it's, like, messy. They over-explain so many things. There's a lot of plot holes. The characters do things that don't really make sense for what the character is. And in the end, it's just like, oh, a big fight where the superheroes win. Hooray. Logan is so different. It's like they don't lay out everything. You have to sort of interpret from the way the characters are acting. It's a great script. It's visually great. That's just the film side of it. As a superhero movie, it's the Wolverine that we've wanted. It's so violent. It's like hard to watch at points, how violent it is, but it is Wolverine at his top. Like, I feel like the last scene where it was like, yes, that's Wolverine, was in X2. In the fight in the mansion, and it was just him like putting his claws through a dude's foot. In this, he just murders so many people, and it's just it feels like he's finally like gets his claws out.
Yeah, there's not to spoil too much of it, but there's a point where Professor X's powers go kind of crazy, and everybody is frozen, and Wolverine is the only one, because you know he's super strong and vulnerable, is able to push himself forward through these waves of Professor X's powers. So these guys are frozen and they're just standing there watching Wolverine coming as he's like, and just standing still. So you get these shots of him being like, claw through the head, and yeah, while the guy is frozen there, and it's horrifying.
A big man taking on a group of frozen men.
Yeah. They're very bad.
Here's the thing. I don't want to take it, like, I feel like me saying this out loud is going to take it as a slam against the movie. I thought it was pretty good. Like, I'm sorry. I know everybody is effusive with praise. They're like, this is the best movie of all time.
No, I'm not even saying that. I'm just saying, like, what X-Men movie is better than this?
None. This is easily the best X-Men movie.
Great.
I think it's a very good superhero movie overall. I think it's one that I won't necessarily watch too many times again, just because it is super sad and super serious. And
it's bleak is the good word.
Yeah, it's, and like it's very, bad things very happen. Emotional. I had like a straight up panic attack about my own mortality in the middle of the movie, because you're like, oh, great. Okay, it's the end of Wolverine's life. Well, I'm certainly not going to survive.
And so let me just say, when you were finished with your panic attack, you were like, that was pretty good. It caused a panic attack. Well, you're because, like, oh, okay, Deese, pretty Deese.
Because here's the thing that held me back. The thing that held me back is because it's still, like, there's still movie cliche things happening in it. Like, there's a huge parcel of information is given out with this video that they watch, which is made by a lady who is on the run, and she's like, I got to make this video to explain what's happening, and it's real well edited. Like, she's on the run, and she had the time to, like, fiddle around in iMovie and get all the transitions right, all the music set up and everything. There's points when she switches perspective in her shots where it's like, I was taking the shot, and then I got somebody else to take the shot, and then we edited it together. And I know that's a little thing, but, like, in the middle, I was like, really? I don't know,
that's
you
funny. I'm such a nitpicker, and I didn't. You're being ridiculous.
Yeah, there's also, I don't know how much we want to get into spoilers, but there's a big thing that happens in the movie that is one of, again, took me out, because I was like, I get why they're doing this, but it is one of the action movie hero cliches that happens to every action movie actor at some point in the lifespan of their career. Hmm. And knowing that, it also took me out of it a little bit. But the last thing that I'll say is I felt like the action scenes were mostly good, but could have been better.
Oh my God.
They were a little
shady. Hate to be the Pete right now, but you're a fucking asshole. No, I it felt weird to say that to a friend. Yeah, I don't know how Pete gets away with it all the time.
I'm not sure.
But I know I'm surprised to hear you say that, because I thought the action was just really well done, and it felt like an X-Men movie, but like a good one.
Yes, it did feel like that. I'm still hoping for like a team X-Men, like a movie that feels like an X-Men movie.
Don't get so cocky.
What?
What do you just let this movie be good, and then there's no.
No.
They may never land a good X-Men team movie. They
it has
can't.
Been 17 years. They, give me an X-Men movie.
Something's up. They can't figure it out right now.
Yo, what the fuck is up?
Yeah.
What's up, know. Fox?
I don't want to be honest.
I don't want to slam it too much, but the movie sucked. So.
Okay, great. Wow, that's weird.
No, I'm kidding. I really liked it.
Yeah.
Now, what about for us? Because we're going to go see it with these expectations that people on social media are like, oh my God, it's so incredible. So now I don't know what to think.
No, keep your expectations like where they would be. Because the story is surprised. It keeps it going. And the parts that like Alex is talking about that like took him out, they move past it quickly. And
it's Hugh Jackman is really good. Patrick Stewart is excellent in the movie. And it's like, it's a Western, you know? I mean, it hits all the genre tropes. It even references them so you know exactly what they're talking about. But it's a nice deconstruction of comic book tropes at the same time. Like, they're literally in the text of the movie.
Yeah.
It's good. It's a good movie. That's all.
There you go. Great. Before, we're not going to do trivia, so very quickly, could you guys pick your favorite question from audience questions, and they're going to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics?
Yeah.
You can
no pressure or anything. But
it's too small of a crowd, so I'm going to disappoint people that I'm staring at.
I'm going to go. I have to give it to Kevin, because his name is also Kevin.
Which question was that?
All right, there we go. Kevin?
He was asking about favorite gorillas and
all right,
animals.
Great, Kevin, that. I'll find you in a minute, and I'll give you the card.
All right, there we go. Excellent. As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day, so we recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Before we go, though, let's get you guys to plug your stuff one more time. Brian, what do you want to plug?
Briggsland, Rebels, Black Road. I'm Brian Wood on almost all social media, so that's the easy way to find me.
All right, very cool. Kevin?
KevinGeeksOut.com to find out about the Kevin Geeks Out shows. Upcoming themes for our monthly shows include monkeys, wizards, being co-hosted by an actual wizard. We have a show on 420, and the guy's a weed wizard, so that show's going to be a party.
So many bowling pins.
We'll bring some bowling pins. Shows about famous monsters coming up, and kaiju, and I think Nick Nadell's going to do the Spider-Man show in June.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. All right, very cool. A couple of things before we go. Next week on the show, Greg Scheigel, who does Pix and X-Babies, is going to be here, so that's exciting. Also, Aaron Sagers, who's an editor-at-large at Sci-Fi Wire and does a ton of stuff traveling all over the country with geek stuff, so he'll talk all about that. Also, we should mention the show is free to come see and free to listen to, but does cost us a little bit of money to do. So if you would like to donate money, patreon.com/comicbookclub. We also do two more shows you can check out. We're doing a Riverdale podcast and a Legion podcast weekly, which are in the regular podcast feed, but also in their own separate feeds on both iTunes and Google Play, which you can check out. Mm. Justin, what do you want to plug?
Friends on Facebook, so you can find out about all of our great guests, and follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com, nerdist.com for the podcast and more. A couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank our fabulous interns, Iman Bell, Tumberjar, Craig Fletcher, David McKay, and Riley Trahan. We want to thank Brian and Kevin for being on the show.
Yeah!
Woo! Thank you. Prime.
Yeah!
But most of all, we want to thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Totally free. Please tell your friends. Good night!
Good night, guys. Thank you! Thank you.